Asian region talk these days is dominated by China, very much of late, as you know, if you look at the papers today. But there's a whole other story, that of the region's middle powers, a group of countries, including us, which have a whole different temperament, set of challenges, set of options, maybe a different sense of the future too. And this is a very important area in terms of their identity versus their capabilities, and also what others think of them. I'm going to speak to two authors now who believe this is a much undertold story, and they're keen for us to engage given that we are part of this group. Dr. Ralph Emmers and Sarah Teo are both from the Rajaratnam School of International Studies at the Nanyang Technological University in Singapore, and they have a new book out called Security Strategies of Middle Powers in the Asia Pacific. It's just been released by Melbourne University Press, and I'm delighted they're joining us now. Good morning and welcome.
Hey, good morning.
Good morning.
Dr. Emmers, how do you define a middle power?
Well, there are many different ways of defining them. You could look at them in terms of their capabilities. They're not great powers. They're not small powers. But you could also define middle powers in terms of how they define themselves, how they perceive their own identity. And I think Australia here is a wonderful example of a country that has, since the end of the Second World War, defined itself as a middle power, as a country that does not belong to the great powers of this world, but that can still make a difference on the international scene. That, to me, is a good working definition of a middle power.
So it does matter how other powers define it, does it? Define middle powers. That's crucial to trying to understand them?
Well, ultimately, it's not just Australia that has to define itself as a middle power. It also has to be recognized by others as such. And again, I think on that particular criteria, Australia has, over the years, been recognized by the international community as a middle power that can contribute to solving problems, but also promoting good order in this part of the world.
Now, Sarah, Australia has been calling itself, you know, Ralph has explained that, a middle power since the end of really World War II. Who else in the Asia-Pacific region would call themselves a middle power?
South Korea is a very clear case as well, although it only started calling itself a middle power from the early 1990s. Indonesia as well in the late 2000s, but I think recently it has also gradually moved away from the middle power label in some sense. Those are the three main countries in the Asia-Pacific have really identified and seen themselves as middle powers.
And yet in your book, you also look at Malaysia as quite a conundrum in this sense.
Yes. Malaysia is more of a case where it tries to behave like a middle power, especially in the early 1990s or the early 2000s. I think under Prime Minister Mahathir, where it built a lot of norms in the region, especially under the ASEAN umbrella. But the interesting thing about Malaysia is that during that period of time, it never really called itself a middle power explicitly. Malaysia for us is a case where a country might not call itself a middle power, but behave in foreign policy in ways that could be understood to be how middle powers act.
Interesting. And you don't include, say, New Zealand, and you don't include Vietnam, which I was quite intrigued by.
Well, in terms of New Zealand and Vietnam, capability-wise, they don't really qualify in our calculations as a quantitative middle power in that sense. Identity-wise, I don't think Vietnam really sees itself as a middle power yet. New Zealand, though, as you rightly pointed out, is an interesting case because I think occasionally it does see itself as a middle power, but I don't think that identity is as consistent or strong as, say, Australia or South Korea.
Yes, Ralph Emmers, it's very interesting, this dance, as you describe it, between identity and capabilities. Why is that an important distinction to make?
Well, again, let's go back to the Malaysia case. To a large extent, Malaysia has the capabilities to define itself as a middle power. But ultimately, the middle power concept is often associated with being Western-dominated. And it does look like Malaysia is a little bit uncomfortable with defining itself as part of that club. Because outside of the Asia-Pacific, you could also look at countries like Canada, you could look at the Scandinavian countries, and other examples. So this is where both looking at what a country can actually do, but also what a country wants to be viewed as, I think are both important factors.
So are you hinting there, really, that the notion of a middle power with, a majority Islamic internal identity, Muslim citizens, and of course this is where Indonesia is in a very interesting case study, they're not sure whether they want to join that club?
I think that religious factor is one. You could also highlight another one, which is wanting to be a leader of the developing world, or rising Asia, for instance. So you're correct, Indonesia is a fascinating example because it will be interesting to see whether it wants to continue defining itself as a middle power or whether it actually prefers to define itself as a rising Asian power. And in that sense, it would categorize itself perhaps in the same category as India.
Well, they were very much, of course, the non-aligned temperament.
Exactly, because again, there is that notion that perhaps being a middle power means that you end up supporting liberal values, putting yourself more in that kind of camp, rather than perhaps the non-alignment movement, which of course now sounds like a bit of a cliche and Cold War-ish kind of concept, but which still resonates to some extent in Jakarta and New Delhi.
So how do you see Australia, and there's a very lively debate in Australia about the trade-off between, in effect, being an absolutely signed-up member of the alliance and very heavily perceived to be supporting the US and trying to juggle our interests in this region. So where do you see Australia in terms of its challenges?
Well, this is certainly a dilemma because ultimately one factor of being a middle power is to be perceived as, to some extent, neutral, as trying to promote good international norms, but without being too closely associated with a particular country. So, of course, in the case of Australia, you do have that very special partnership with the United States, on par, let's say, with the alliance that exists between Japan and the US. While at the same time, of course, you want to be recognized as an Asia-Pacific country that has immediate influence in Asia, and especially in Southeast Asia. And this is where, from time to time, perhaps, Australia has had to face a dilemma between, on the one hand, wanting to play a role in Southeast Asia, while also not wanting to be recognized as the deputy sheriff of Washington in the region.
So, Sarah, how does a middle power classically affect the environment around them? Have you drawn any conclusions on that?
Yes. So, based on the four middle powers we studied, middle powers can affect the environment around them in two ways. Because middle powers have a certain level of capabilities, so they are able to target these capabilities at very specific problems. So, for example, when you look at South Korea, it's targeting pretty much the majority of its capabilities at
North Korea.
North Korean issue. So that's the first way. The second way would be general, broad way in which middle powers can build norms of behavior, expectations of behavioral standards, and confidence at the multilateral level. So I think this is very clear in the case of Australia.
So this is this whole rules-based global order thing that we keep hearing about.
Yes, exactly.
And Ralph, do you sense that you have to be careful of overreach as a middle power or not?
Certainly, but I think here again, Australia is in quite a unique situation because you have the advantage of both having the capabilities to tackle specific problems, let's say transnational crime or counterterrorism issues or climate change.
Or peacekeeping, which of course...
Exactly, a very good example again. While at the same time also having an international voice at the United Nations, and of course through regional institutions. We are about to celebrate the ASEAN-Australia partnership. And Australia is, of course, perceived as a very reliable partner here in Southeast Asia. So, again, Australia has that benefit of being able to solve problems or help solve problems while at the same time promote good international norms of behavior.
So what about the temperament internally and externally? Like, how much does a country have to bring along its voters or its citizens in order to do this job well as a middle power, Ralph?
Well, ultimately, you need to have them on board because it gives you additional legitimacy regionally as well. But I think here again, Australians can be reasonably relaxed about it. I think the Australian public opinion fully realizes that Asia is the future and that contributing to both solving problems but also promoting peace and stability in the region is ultimately in Australia's national interest.
But I wonder where Indonesia plays out in this, Sarah, because you make the point that it's really been considered itself a middle power and a small power and a sort of an emerging big power. And I don't quite know where it is now. I mean, how much do its political elites worry about bringing people along on that, and does it limit the way they see themselves?
It's important for Indonesia to have the domestic constituents on board as well because, I mean, Indonesia is still a democracy And that's part of being a democracy, having your electorate, I guess, contributing to policy at large. But as Ralph also said, the middle power concept, the way it is that it has been very associated with the Western liberal order. So I think for Indonesia, there is a dilemma there in that, you know, it wants to be a middle power in some sense, but it doesn't want to embrace that identity fully because that might actually lose it some of its domestic voters.
And if I may add to this, Indonesia has an additional issue, which is one of capabilities. Ultimately, I think our Indonesian friends have excellent reasons to be very proud of what they've been able to achieve over the last 20 years in terms of their process of democratization and so on. But they have some difficulties in influencing others, partly because the capabilities are not yet available. Now, the Indonesian economy is growing quickly, but ultimately socioeconomic problems at home still limit what Indonesia can actually do regionally.
So if you don't, for instance, turn up to take a part in the defeat of IS in the Philippines, as an example, if you effectively say, no, we're not going there, does it affect your standing in others' eyes as a middle power?
It can do, but I think in this particular case, we should also refer to the fact that Indonesia is still keeping a very standard view of national sovereignty and non-interference in the affairs of other states. So this could have been driven more by wanting to remain fully committed to traditional norms of international relations rather than its inability to address a particular issue. But I think your point is well taken because it does indicate a case where Indonesia may verbally be promoting particular ideas. And I think the Bali Forum on Democracy is a very good example of that as well. But then ultimately, it may not have the capabilities, the financial capabilities, to really promote those views. And I think here a contrast can be made with Australia, because Australia, again, has the capabilities to, shall we say, promote a particular agenda in the region.
Interestingly, you didn't include the Philippines in your middle powers.
Well, most books must only have X number of case studies. But I think the Philippines could have been comparable to Malaysia or comparable even perhaps to Vietnam. Growing economy, large population, important geopolitical positioning, and so on and so forth. Mm-hmm. But ultimately, the middle power identity is not recognized in Manila, and this is one of the reasons why we decided not to include it.
So, final question to you both. What lies ahead for these sorts of powers, in your view? What do you think still needs to be researched to understand the role they play? And some people, of course, believe that this is the story, this should be the story of the region, the growing confidence and rise and sort of comfortable assertiveness of middle powers.
I guess one for research could be how these countries, you know, with the Asian background and the whole Asian values debate, how do they look at this middle power concept? Is it similar to the Western concept or, you know, are there significant differences? And if so, how does that affect the way they behave and the way they influence the region?
Quite a challenge for Australian policymakers to hear that, I would have thought. Ralph, how do you see it?
Well, I think that the biggest story in town is probably how the China-US relationship is going to evolve in the 21st century. And I think this is where the middle powers have a role to play. If we are indeed moving towards some kind of a multipolar Asia-Pacific region, then the role that countries like Australia, Indonesia and others will play in making sure that this is a region where you have a strong support of international law, rule of law, but also, of course, where you have attempts at solving immediate problems like the South China Sea, the Korean Peninsula and others. This is where the middle powers will have to come in and punch above their weight.
Look, thank you both very much indeed. Ralph Emmers and Sarah Teo, thank you for your time.
Thank you very much.
And Ralph and Sarah are both from the Rajaratnam School of International Studies at the Nanyang Technological University in Singapore. And their book is Security Strategies of Middle Powers in the Asia Pacific. It's been published by Melbourne University Press.